You're back with Colorado Matters from Colorado Public Radio. I'm Ryan Warner. Well before Lance Armstrong tumbled from his pedestal this week, there was Barry Bonds in baseball, Marion Jones in track, and many others. Well, clinical psychologist Stanley Teitelbaum digs into the why in his book, Athletes Who Indulge Their Dark Side, and he joins us now. Stan, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
Why does the dark side of athletes interest you?
Well, I think we all have a dark side, but it's so much in the public eye. You know, we put our sports heroes so much up on a pedestal that when they misbehave or fall from that pedestal, it becomes a major source of disillusionment. And illusion and disillusionment are major themes that I've been involved in my practice of psychotherapy for many, many years. And so I'm sort of extending that to writing about that in the world of sports.
Let me pick up on almost that wordplay, a disillusionment and illusion. Are you saying that putting athletes on pedestals is, to some extent, creating an illusion?
Exactly right. It creates the illusion because we the fans need to connect with a hero. Now, many of these heroes have been treated in a very special way from as far back as they can remember, often as young as age 8, when in Little League they hit their first home run, and lots of people, you know, surrounded them, eager to do their bidding and to protect them and to shelter them. So they've acquired the characteristics of arrogance, grandiosity, and entitlement, which I've coined as the toxic athlete profile.
What you're describing is something of a vicious circle. I mean, this person is truly talented and then is praised for those talents. Then it goes to their head, and then but their talent, it's a back and forth between the observers and the observed.
That's correct.
Well, you have so far alluded to baseball because a lot of your work has been looking at baseball players. You also write in your latest book about cyclist Floyd Landis. In 2006, he had a miraculous come-from-behind victory in the Tour de France.
Right.
He tested positive for synthetic testosterone. Tell us his story, would you?
Well, it's an interesting story because it sort of is a lead-in or a link to the larger betrayal of Lance Armstrong. And Floyd Landis operated in the shadow of Lance Armstrong. He was one of the people that the test results were positive. That is, the ratio of his epitestosterone to testosterone level was something like 11 to 1, which was three times the normal limit. And he said, well, I'm innocent. I didn't do anything. I never did anything wrong. He, you know, initially blamed those test results on the alcohol he had drank the night before or some flu bug that he was getting over recently, and then ultimately picked up on there were flaws in the lab that, you know, found those results. And he spent $2 million, actually, to defend himself. And he wrote the book in which he loudly protested and proclaimed his innocence. And what I wrote in the book was that I think part of that came from the fact that he felt emboldened, Floyd Landis did, felt emboldened by the fact that his hero, the guy that he most looked up to, Lance Armstrong, had been tested so many, 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 many times and had never been found to test positively. So I think in some way that made Floyd Landis somewhat more emboldened to claim his innocence and to kind of hang out and hide in the shadow of Lance Armstrong.
You write about Landis in your book, although it is supremely self-destructive to jeopardize their careers and their place in sports history, the expectation among these high-profile athletes is that society's love for them will prevail and that they will be quickly forgiven of any misconduct. Does history show that's true, that the public in their putting these athletes on a pedestal, in their admiration for them, are also quick to forgive?
A lot of times that is true because the public is so invested in their connection to the hero. And in the case of Lance Armstrong, it's especially interesting because he has done so many good things that he, in spite of all of the negative publicity and the way in which he now is being stripped of all of his Tour de France victories, he continues to have, curiously, a significant amount of public support.
You also write that psychologically it is possible to convince yourself that you are innocent of a wrongdoing, even though another part of you knows that you are guilty. I'd like you to expound a little bit on that, holding these two disparate ideas in your head. You're both guilty and innocent.
Yes, I think that is the basic principle there. It's a psychological principle of compartmentalization, which in effect means that you have different parts of your personality. And it doesn't mean you're a split personality. We all have different sides of our personality. But in these cases, and Armstrong, I think, is a very good example of that, one part of your personality can be truly a leader, and at the same time, the different part of your personality is so embedded or involved in winning at all costs that you do whatever you have to do to cross the line, even if it means cheating.
You're listening to Colorado Matters. I'm Ryan Warner. And in the wake of Lance Armstrong being banned for life from pro cycling, having all of his titles at the Tour de France removed, we're speaking with a psychologist, Stan Teitelbaum. His latest book is called Athletes Who Indulge Their Dark Side. When you look at scandals in other sports, particularly doping in other sports, say baseball, what can it tell us about the impact on the sport?
The initial response usually is outrage and indignation. Then as other scandals emerge, it comes out that, well, it's not only Mark McGwire that did this, but then Barry Bonds and then Roger Clemens and who knows how many others. Gradually, it shifts away from the sense of outrage and indignation to what I think now is very, very prevalent, which is what I refer to as the whatever syndrome, a sense of indifference.
It's like this has become the new normal. I understand
exactly.
You've looked at polling around fan support in the wake of scandals, and what does it show about, say, the following of a sport, the buying of tickets?
I think baseball, again, comes to mind because there was a decline. You know, the whole home run chase with Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa occurred back in 1998. And after the reporter discovered that McGwire had been using a steroid, I think there was a drop in attendance, and it took a number of years for it to come back. I think baseball, for other reasons as well as doping or steroid use, baseball has lost much of its luster, certainly has been supplanted by professional football as America's major sport. But I think the doping scandals have also contributed to a decline in attendance, and I think baseball is fortunate to limp along and eke out a very, very tiny increment in attendance year to year these days, which mostly can be attributable to a close pennant race.
Have you looked at the effect of this on kids, you know, who may dream of being the next big cyclist, or who may just enjoy cycling and admire the pros?
Yes, I think it's really good that you're raising this, because I think this is one of the most important implications of the Armstrong scandal, and as well as the scandal in all of the other sports. That is, what is the impact that this has on kids? And what is the message? You know, does it send the message to kids that, you know what, you win at any cost? Is it okay to beat and cheat?
I'd like to wrap up with, in a way, where we began with that vicious circle we described, that someone who's very talented gets a lot of admiration, and then the admirers admire more. And is there a way to ease that circle somehow, that cycle, so that, I don't know, there's not such a high pedestal? I imagine that it's impossible to get rid of the pedestal altogether.
Yeah, I think you're not going to get rid of the pedestal altogether. And, of course, in one sense, this is where effective parenting comes in. Parents have to also work with their kids to not over-idealize and to also be able to in some way explain that when a hero falters, sometimes good people also may do bad things. And, you know, the original example of this goes back to the World Series scandal of 1919 and, you know, that famous line of the 8-year-old kid on the steps of the grand jury when Shoeless Joe Jackson was convicted of having thrown the World Series. And there's that famous image of that kid on the steps greeting Joe Jackson when he's leaving the courthouse and saying, "Please, Joe, say it ain't so." So it's so hard for the kid to let go of his belief in his hero. And your question is, you know, how can we reduce that in some way? And I'm suggesting that one way might be for the parents to try to put things in more perspective for their kids along the way before it all explodes.
Stan, thank you so much for talking to us.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Clinical psychologist Stanley Teitelbaum is the author of Athletes Who Indulge Their Dark Side and a previous book on the subject, Sports Heroes, Fallen Idols. He joined us from New York City.